Okay. Scene 3, Act
1. So we're in Perek Zayin. Oh, we're in Perek Zayin in the Netzach Yisrael. Okay. Last time we did the expansion on Tur Malka, and this time we're doing the expansion on Churban Beitar. Asaka the Rispa Charav Beitar. So let's read a little bit of the Gemara. Again, remind ourselves of a little bit of what he discussed in one of the earlier prakim about Churban Beitar, and then get into the details of this Gemara here. Asaka the Rispa Charav Beitar, the Gemara says. What's that? Abu Nahigu ki Abu Misyalad Yanukta Shasli Arza and Yanukta Shasli Turnisa. Their custom was that when a boy was born, they would plant one kind of a cedar tree. When a girl was born, they would plant this other kind. And then, ki Abu Minsidi, when they would get married, Kaitzilahu, they would cut down these trees. Va'avdu Ganana. And from that, they would make the chuppah. Yumachara v'kochalfa barte the Kaysar. What happened was, one day, thank you very much, one day the daughter of the Caesar was passing by, and Itvar Sokka the Rispik. And what happened was that her Sokka the Rispik broke, which is always a bad thing. right? So Sokka the Rispik was part of the wagon, right? So the door to her wagon broke, and she needed some wood in order to be able to fix it. So katsu arza v'ailula. They cut down the cedar tree and they gave it to her. Asu. So you imagine they were cutting down this cedar tree, which was destined for the wedding party. It was very, very strong attachment to that. So asu nafula alayu and mechunhu. So the Jews fell upon them, pounced upon the daughter of the Caesar and the Caesar. And see, I told you we'd be learning a little Shakespeare. Asu amrulei le Caesar mordu bach yudoi. And they came to the Caesar and they said, the Jews are rebelling against you. So asa iluyayu. And that's why he came upon them to destroy them. So that's the original story, which you remember we looked at already much earlier. When the Maharal was setting up the idea that there are three components to Eretz Yisrael, as seen in the story of the Meraglim, what they were asked to look at, as we suggested, as seen in the bracha that Hashem gave to Avram Avinu. There was Yerushalayim, which was the center of Birchas Hashem, of the connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There was Har HaMelech, which was the place where there were the tremendous numbers, population numbers, for the Jewish people. And there was Beitar, which was the city, which was Krach Beitar, the city which was built up, the construction, that which they made, that which they built and developed within Eretz Yisrael. Those three elements are the three elements of the strength of Eretz Yisrael. And those three elements are the Romans destroyed. And as we saw before, let's say last week, we spoke about Har HaMelech, where the issue was the rooster and the hen, which is the sign of prolific reproduction, which was their school that they had at their weddings, and that was what the Romans took away from them. Over here, it's the cedar trees, which were used to make the chuppah, which is all a matter of construction and creation in that way, that is symbolic of the city of Beitar, symbolic of the creation of a house. The microcosm of the strength of the city of Beitar, and that was what the Romans took away from them. So that's the basis of the skula of this story and of how this takes place. And this is again the lack of foresight, how they fought back against the Romans and not recognizing the consequences of what would come as a result of this. The Maharal mentions here in Perek Zayin a very interesting, point, which I'm going to share with you. And I'm not 100% confident in understanding this point of the Maharal so perfectly well. But the Maharal points out the difference between the story of Har HaMelech and the story of Beitar. And who made the problem? In the previous case, In the case of HaRamelech, it was Gunda de Raimoy. It was a troop of Romans. In this story, it was the daughter of the Caesar. There was a Gunda de Raimoy that came on. They were hungry. They took the chickens. And over here, it was the daughter of the Caesar whose wagon broke. And she was the one who took it. And he wants to explain, of course, that nuance also to jive, to fit with this Gemara. And the Maharal says like this. The first thing he says, which is a very, very, very important yesod, very important principle. He says, you see, they were taking it for themselves. They were taking it for themselves. When we speak about these three areas, Yerushalayim, the Migdash, the Kedusha of Yerushalayim, was not taken by the Romans, was destroyed by the Romans. It is true that they walked off with the Kelim of the Beis HaMikdash. But what happened in Yerushalayim primarily, what they viewed, what the Maharal views as happening in Yerushalayim primarily was destruction. Because Esav is never in the market, Rome, as the heir of Esav, therefore, is never in the market to take the holiness, to take the Kedusha and the connection to Hashem that Klal Yisrael has. When you look at the brachos of Esav, we talked about it a little bit last week, that Esav got when he said, come on, so you gave brachos to Yaakov, but there's nothing left for me. So what he got was that whatever, when Yaakov drops the ball, so then Esav will be able to have the dew of the heavens, the fat of the land, but the godly connection, the ho'elekim, is not there. That's a very significant difference in the rendition. To Yaakov, Yitzchak said, V'yitein l'cho ha'elokim. To Esav, he said, Mital ha'shamayim yeh moshavecha. Right? Mishmani yoresi yeh moshavecha, Mital ha'shamayim he'ol. The one had the connection to Hashem. Esav wanted what was his goal and his direction in life, which was dominance in the physical world. He wasn't interested in taking over the Beis HaMikdash. He was interested in destroying the Beis HaMikdash. But when it came to the numbers of HaRamelech, when it came to the strength of the city of Beitar, that was something which Esav was interested in having. That was something which he was interested in wresting away and taking away from Bnei Yisrael, from the Jewish people. I like to say over this Marsha, it's a remarkable, remarkable Marsha. The Marsha is on the Gemara at the end of Maseches Makos, where the Gemara says the famous story about Rabbi Akiva and his colleagues who were passing by Har HaTzofim, and they looked down onto the Har HaBayis, and they saw Shul Yoytzei Mibeis Kodshei HaKadoshim. They saw a fox walking out of the Holy of Holies, and they started crying, and Rabbi Akiva started laughing. So the Gemara tells the story. They said to him, "Why are you laughing? Right? How could you be laughing?" So he said, "Why are you crying?" And they said, "What are you talking about? The Holy of Holies is a place where even the Kohen Gadol was only able to enter once a year. And a Zora Korev Yumas, somebody who wasn't supposed to be there, went in there at any other time, would die. And now we see Shualim Hilchubay, now we see foxes walking around freely, wild animals. We shouldn't cry." And Rabbi Akiva said, "Well, you know, this is why I am laughing." And he said, "Because there was a prophecy that Tzion Sodate Charesh, Tzion would be plowed up to become like a field, where wild animals would indeed have sway, would be able to do their thing. And before I saw that prophecy fulfilled, exactly so literally, I wouldn't know that the other prophecies would be fulfilled, which were the positive prophecies that Adyesh was a Kenim, was a Kenais, Berucheves Yerushalayim, that the elderly men and women will still be able to sit and enjoy in the streets of Yerushalayim. So the fact that I see that things are going according to plan tells me that don't worry, we're going to be at the good part, we're also going to have the plan." So Rabbi Akiva laughed. Marsha discusses this Gemara. He has different questions. But I'll just tell you the point which he makes, which is a fascinating point, and a point which makes one perhaps wonder a little bit about whether the Marsha was aware of what was happening in Eretz Yisrael at his own time, during his life. But the Marsha says like this. What Rabbi Akiva and his colleagues saw there was that the Beis HaMikdash was empty. That it was, there were Shualim Hilchubo. So it's true that it was not like it was in the days when there was a Beis HaMikdash, when there was a Holy of Holies there and only the Kohen Gadol could go in. However, he did not see Esav handling the Beis HaMikdash. He did not see Esav there with his temple, Esav doing things. It was a wild and empty place. Wild animals were roving there. And there's something of a consolation there that it wasn't taken over by Esav. there's something of a consolation that it's empty. If you can't have it, nobody can have it. Like the Gemara says, the Pasuk promises in the Teichacha v'shamimu aleha oivechem. When it speaks about Eretz Yisrael, when the Jewish people are forced to leave Eretz Yisrael, so the Pasuk says that your enemies will be, the way it's understood, they will be desolate upon it. Which means what? That the enemies of Klal Yisrael, when they take over Eretz Yisrael, they'll never be able to really cultivate it. They're never going to really be able to bring forth the great, great potential of Eretz Yisrael. It's only when the Jews live on it that the land responds. Otherwise, it's going to be empty and barren. And that's the history of Eretz Yisrael. That when the Jews weren't on it, it really wasn't very developed. So that's something of a consolation to the Jewish people. You don't have it, but don't worry, they don't have it either. And so the Marsha says that was part of the consolation. The reason why I say it is because today, L'tzareinu Harav, if you go to the Makom HaMikdash, it is used. It's not used by Esav. It's used by Yishmael. Yishmael is, obviously, has in his name and in his being more of a spirituality issue and a positive spirituality issue than Esav. Esav, who's very much the physical creation of this world. So, you know, the Marsha just makes no allusion to it. During the time of the Marsha, there was already the Dome of the Rock and the Al-Aqsa Mosque were already built on the Har HaBayis during the time of the Marsha. But he was far away from there, right? So, I don't know. He makes no allusion to it, and he speaks about this idea that the place was empty. I wonder what he knew. I wonder what he did not know.
When did he live?
17s.
So they had a church there, but it was destroyed after the Crusades. It was
way before, huh?
So this is after it's already a mosque again.
There was a church on the Har HaBayis?
Yes.
That was destroyed by the Crusades? Okay.
I mean, they turned the Dome of the Rock into a church, and then they turned it back.
Okay. Well, the Dome of the Rock didn't exist before the Crusades.
The Crusades were in the 600s, I think.
Hmm? The Dome of the Rock was built in 600? Okay.
They did have a church on there.
Okay. After the Muslims had a thing on it.
The Muslims had something, then I think they turned it into a church.
So it could be, you know, in response to the Muslims. Whatever the specific historical stage is, but the way the Maral is saying it over here is that here they wanted the chickens, they wanted the cedar trees. Right? We don't have that by the destruction of Yerushalayim. There it was just ravaging destruction. Because those elements, which are elements of material bracha, of the populace, of the physical structure, that was something that they wanted to take for themselves.
And
so that's
by concept, there was no taking of anything.
Right, it was all right. So the Maral says, now let's look at it. By Gunda de Raimoy is a battalion, it's a troop. It's numbers. Right? Numbers came in and they were trying to take the even greater numbers that would be offered to them by Har HaMelech. Bas Kesar, the daughter of the Caesar, was the one who wanted to take the strength of Beitar. What's the idea? Why would the daughter, right, be into construction, so to speak? So the Maral says like this. And it's it's a very interesting suggestion. it's a very interesting suggestion, but I think one, I don't know, you could ask me questions on it that I will not be able to answer. He says like this. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Me'Avid Barai. Shekemoi Sha'ben Va'Bas Hu Binyan Prati. A son or daughter are binyan prati. They are the private building of the person. They are binyan. Right? Havali bonim v'imayin mesa anaychi. Rachel imenu said to Yaakov Avinu, give me sons, otherwise mesa anaychi. Right? So Rashi brings that the idea is, I'm quoting the wrong place. Sorry, imenu said to Avram Avinu, right? Here, take my shipcha hagar, Vibone mimena, right? And I will be built from her. Rachel said it. Excuse me if I'm bringing you the wrong places. But Rashi says, but over there she says, here, she'll have a child, she'll be a surrogate, and I will be built through her. What do you mean, vibone mimena? I'll have children. whether because they'll be my surrogate children, it'll be as if they're my children, whether it means that somehow through that I'll have a merit to have a child of my own. But says Rashi that the idea is that without children, the person is not called bonoi, is not called built, ela horus. It's as if they are horus, as if they are the opposite of built up. Horus is sort of, struck down, right? Laharos is to deconstruct, to destroy. So the child is the binyan, is building up the person themselves. That's indeed why it's called ben. That's why it's called the child, the son. The son, ben, is from the lashon, from the term of binyan. So therefore, that which built up the Caesar himself was his daughter. Gunda de Raimoy, right, was just, numbers of people. But that which built up he himself was his daughter. And therefore, his daughter stands for building, his children stand for building in the micro. And therefore, when it comes to krach betar, which is to build and to create something, so that indeed is building in the macro. Now the pasuk which comes to mind to bring this point forth is the pasuk which we read in the haftorah of every tanis tzibur, where the sarisim, where those who are not able to have children are addressed, right? Koy amar Hashem, right? The sarisim asher yishmeru es shab seisai v'nosati lahem. I will give them in my homes and in my walls, in my buildings and in my walls, yod vashem, right? I'll give them there a hand, a place, vashem, and a reputation, which is beyond sons and daughters. In other words, a building, right? That's the yad vashem, right? The yad vashem, that the monument to the Holocaust, all the children that were lost, so something is created to replace that. And we spoke about it. Remember when we spoke about the Avram Avinu having the brachos that included the three components that the Maral isolated of Eretz Yisrael. So we said that Va'agadlo Shemecha, I will make your name great, was corresponding to construction. Like we find that in the Dor HaMabul, the way they wanted to make for themselves a name, a presence, was by building this huge tower, by a major construction project. So here, right, the Navi says, I will give you, a physical construct that will go beyond sons and daughters. Says the Maral, so Bas Kesar, the daughter of the Kesar, his child, was supposed to build him up. The presence of a child gives him that element of building, of adding to his reputation. And she was going to take it the next step, take it the step further, which was to build, to take the power of building. You find many times in the Chumash, they would call the name of the city that they built up with the name of the child. These were all those enterprises to establish a presence. A person can establish a presence personally through their own children, can establish a presence through what they create and construct. Therefore, says the Gemara, the Bas Kesar, says the Maral, the Bas Kesar was the one who took this because she represented what the Caesar wanted to build within this world. And he says a very interesting thing. So he says, so why wouldn't it be the Ben Kesar? Right?
Binyan is Ben.
Right? Binyan is Ben. Now Bas is also, he speaks about Banta, right? He argues that it's a silent nun in Bas, right? That really the term for daughters, Bante is also a term which refers to daughters. But the Bas is also biased. It has a relationship. Although the term Ben might be more related to Binyan. But why the daughters? And here he makes a fascinating argument. And the argument is that the father really can claim more of a Binyan through his daughter than he can claim through his son. How's that? It's counterintuitive, right? The child carries on the family name, and so on and so forth. The daughter, right, she'll get married, she'll assume somebody else's name, somebody else will take credit for those Einiklach, those grandchildren. Well, he doesn't relate it to that specifically, although an argument could be made there as well. But he says like this, that the idea is, a daughter in Torah law, in Halacha, a daughter, at least while she is a minor, is in the reshus of the father. She is controlled. She is owned by the father. A son is never owned by his father. A daughter, for instance, can be married off by the father. Technically speaking, I do not recommend it. But when she is a minor, right, she could be married off by her father. She can be sold as a shifcha, as a maidservant. The Torah itself is not, you know, it's technically speaking, though, it's a sign of the fact that somehow his relationship to his daughter is one where he is more in control, more owning. He has the power to be mater, to be mefer, to veto her nedarim. Many things where the father has this power over the daughter that he doesn't have a corresponding power over his son. So the son sort of is a runaway. Yeah, it's something which builds up the father, but then very quickly establishes itself on its own. Whereas the daughter is more, you know, like your building, you know, that it's yours for a while. You know, it's yours. She is yours. So therefore, that's why it was through Bas Kesar, the daughter of the Caesar. That's what the Maral argues. That's what I'm referring to when I said, you know, okay, I mean, I hear it. You know, nice arguments, but I could have heard nice arguments in the other direction also, you know, that would go the other way. But this is how he says it and explains this. Okay.
Building a wagon, I mean, what do you expect? Along these lines, if you really, this is symbolic of building something. I mean, I guess in the most practical way, that's the only reason that she's there is she's traveling, and therefore that's what she's going to build. But
it's an excellent question. I don't know. Maral does not address it. It's an excellent question. Why does she end up building, of all things, the wagon?
I mean, it's the idea of destroying what was built by Bnei Israel and carrying it away.
It could be. And it also could be, you know, that it's the sign sort of you know, the invading armies, you know, who are coming, you know, rolling through town, so to speak, in other way we would say. But it's a ha'ara which deserves. Maybe they're not staying in Eretz Yisrael.
But what's the wheel?
When you build up your family, there's always a gilgal, a certain amount. There's a certain megalgal to take your children and the megalgal whatever you have into the wheel.
It was the door. But it was still a wagon. Okay. It's a good question. Okay, let's move on to the actual story of the destruction of Beitar, which the Gemara continues to describe. Yes, please.
So which was it, the son or daughter tree that was cut down? Do you know?
It says Arza, which sounds like the son tree.
Okay.
Although Tornisa is a form of Erez, but it's given what the Gemara just said, it sounds like it was the male tree that was cut down. Gadol b'chor yafko keren Yisrael. So the Gemara continues to describe the details, some of the details of the terrible destruction of Beitar. And it quotes the pasuk in Eicha, which says, Goda, which is basically to cut out, b'chor yaf, with a fury, called keren Yisrael, all of the keren. The keren is the horn, the strength of the Jewish people. Amrav Zer, Amrav Avo, Amrav Yechman. Elu shmeinim elef, karnei milchama. This refers to the 80,000 karnei milchama, the horns of war, shenichnasu lekrach Beitar b'shoshel akduha, that entered the city of Beitar when they captured it. V'hargu bo anoshim v'noshim v'taf, and they murdered men, women, and children. Ad shoholach doman v'nofal yam hagadol, until their blood flowed into the yam hagadol, the Mediterranean Sea. Shema Taimer Kreva Haisa. You say, okay, big deal. It was on the banks of the Mediterranean Sea. No, Rechaika Haisa Mil. It was a mil, right, most of a mile away, and the blood flowed so much that it flowed into the sea. Tani Rebbe Eliezer HaGadol Omer, Shnei Necholim Yesh BeBikas Yodayim. There are two streams in Bikas Yodayim, in the Valley of Yodayim. Interesting name for a valley of hands, the Valley of Hands. Echad Meishach Eilech, Ve'echad Meishach Eilech. One goes in this direction, and one goes in that direction. In other words, tributaries that broke off. V'shiru Chachamim, and the Chachamim assessed and said, Shnei Chalokim Mayim Ve'echadam. Those streams, after this destruction of Beitar, were two parts water to one part dam, one part blood. Masnisa Tana, Shiva Shonim Basru Evde Kechames Karmein, Midaman Shel Yisrael Beloy Zevel. For 7 years, the Goyim used just the water in order to fertilize their vineyards. They didn't need to add any other fertilizer because it was so rich in nutrients from the dam, from the blood of the Haruge Beitai. Right, that's what the Gemara says. Okay, this is the piece, you know, until the bottom of the page on Zayin Amud Aleph that we're going to be discussing today, that the Maral expounds upon here today. Okay, now the Keren Yisrael, the strength of Klal Yisrael, and the Karnayim, you know, the Shmeinim Elef, the 80,000 of the horns, so to speak, of the Romans. You know, what does this all mean? And he says like this. The Maral starts off, he speaks about Keren. And he says the Keren, the horn, is always the sign of strength. Right? It's used as a sign of strength, right? It's that piece of external bone that's used to, you know, to butt, to destroy, to pound away at. Right? We speak often about a Keren as a high point, as a strong thing. Bimshaykh, right, when they would anoint kings, right, from a keren, from a flask that was made of a horn, also to show strength. The Kainei Re'im Karnav. So the Keren Yisrael, the strength which existed by the Jewish people, was supplanted by which was really most on display in Krach Beitar, in the city of Beitar, which was the city of strength, as we've seen before. This was completely taken over by the Karnei Milchama, by the show of strength that was shown by the Romans as they destroyed. And then he says, so what's the idea of 80,000? So 80,000, you know, reduce it down quickly to the number 8. And he says, what's the idea of the number 8 here? So he has two ideas. He says 7 is always the number of completion, right? We go through a week and we cycle it at 7 days and then we start again. And you know that that's a very significant theme in the numerology used by the Maral, is that 7 is the Mispar Sholem, is complete. 8 is beyond. Now usually when the Maral speaks of that, it's, you know, it's Me'al Derech HaTeva, it's beyond the natural, right? So you have the Bris Mila and you have the 8 days of Hanukkah and so on and so forth. Here, he uses it in a certain more simple way. That just as the Keren rises above the animal, right? The animal's complete, its head, its top, and then the Keren goes above it. So 8 is the idea of going above the basics. And that's the idea. The Keren is above, and the Shmeinim Elef Karnei Milchama was above. It was some superior, so to speak, strength. And then another thing which he says, which is fascinating, is that the idea is because when you look at anything that's three-dimensional, right, that is in this world, right, anything that's three-dimensional in this world, how many koronos does it have? You know what a keren is?
Corner.
A keren is a corner. Besides being a horn, right, which is a point, it's also how many points it has. How many points does it have? It has 8. 2 on each end of the three dimensions. So it has the 8 koronos. And when you're talking about them trying to conquer this big construct, so they got it at all the corners. That's what he says. Okay, I'm going to leave it at that. But, you know, again, that's it's unbelievable, you know, sort of a thing. You know, what Karen means corners, and a physical object in this world has 8 corners. So that's the Shmeinim Elef, right? And, you know, whenever in his numerology, always 8 becomes 80, can become 80,000. You know, is it just a sign of, you know, turbo? You know, that's what it's doing. Okay, but let's now get to the main theme which he's going to develop here in this destruction, which is this idea of the blood flowing into the rivers that were going to be then used by the Romans in order to, you know, that the farmers used to fertilize their vineyards. Like, what's the idea over here of Nafal Damam Lamayim? What's this idea? So the thing is like this. Beitar was the city of huge built-up physical stature and structure. Huge physical strength. Mayim, water, is in that sense the exact opposite. The only place where you can build is on the Abosha, on the dry land. When the world was covered with water, was completely flooded and covered over with water, right? That was the Tayu Vavayu, the world of emptiness. And even when Hashem separated the waters above from the waters below, but there was nothing. He ended up calling Earth, Oretz, right, which is the planet Earth, he only called it by the Yabosha, the dry land was called Eretz, because that's where you can build, that's where you can produce. The Oretz Nasan Livnei Adam, that's where we can build, that's where we can create. And when you describe something going into the water, that's really the sign of the ultimate destruction, where a human being is not able to function, where structures do not, to the greatest extent, really exist. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, for instance, notes that when Hillel passed by and he saw a gugayles achas shetzaf al pnei amayim, he saw a skull floating in the water. So he responded and he said, "Al di ataft atfuch v'seiv matifay chitufun," because you drowned others, so you were drowned, and those who drowned you will end up being drowned themselves. Right? Amida keneged mida. So it's a lot to discuss in that Mishnah. You know what he saw over there. But seeing a person like that, seeing it taken over by the water, is not the natural. It's not the same as seeing a person in the grave. Right? The grave is still, you know, some kind of a physical presence, a marker which is created for the person, which is a matzeva, some kind of a strength. The water is the complete destruction. And Hashem's preoccupation with destroying things with water. When the Mabul came, he destroyed the world with water. When Mitzrayim was an issue, so the point, when the Jews left Mitzrayim, Mitzrayim was still alive and well. The Jewish people had escaped them. The point of Kasher Isem as Mitzrayim Ayoyim Leisifun Lirai Samayit Ar-Elam, that Mitzrayim will never be the same, was when Mitzrayim was drowned in the water. That's an ultimate destruction. Of course, there's a Mida Keneged Mida in it, which also leads into the Mishnah of Hillel. But the idea is that it's seeing, in this sense, a total decimation, a total destruction. And that's the idea of Mayim. Like the Gemara says on the Pasuk, Avonim Shachaku Mayim, right? Stones can even be made to corrode from water, right? The famous story of Rabbi Akiva, who saw that happen, and he said, you know, even though I'm older, I'm still going to be able to learn. Avonim Shachaku Mayim, the water drips away, the water of Torah there. But the idea is, and that's an important relationship, but the idea is that Mayim is considered to be that destruction. When Moshe Rabbeinu said his words of questioning about the death of Rabbi Akiva, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, one more word and I will turn the whole world into Mayim. Efech es olam kulay l'mayim. Right? Mayim in that sense is the ultimate deconstruction. The ultimate deconstruction. It's all left, indeed, to be nothing. You know, the Sefer HaChinuch has a beautiful, simple explanation of the concept of the mikveh, right? Where he says a person goes into the mikveh and they're tameh, they're impure. And they emerge from the mikveh and they're tahar, and they're pure. What happened? So he says, because that's the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. The world emerged from the water. It's all flooded and covered with water. And then Hashem pushed waters up into the heavens. He parted the waters on the earth. And then the earth emerged. And that's where creation came from, was the earth emerging from the water. That's why in the time of Noach, when Hashem wanted to destroy the earth, so he covered it up again with water. He opened up the windows, the skylights in the heavens above, the wellsprings of the waters below, and water came and flooded. And then when it receded, as the waters receded, then we can start again. And it's a new world. We're called the children of Noah instead of the children of Adam HaRishon. A new world order. Everything is as if recreated, as if we're starting again. And so he says, the person goes into the mikveh, you know, person A, before and after picture, you know. He goes into the mikveh, goes in under the water, and then when they emerge from the water, it's as if they're a beria chadash, as if they're a new being, like the earth emerging from the waters themselves. Water is deconstruction. The emergence from the water is reconstruction. Says the Maharal, so when the Gemara speaks about the city of Beitar, this huge city, so of course you know that the city of Beitar, right, the bricks and stones weren't ground up and put into the river, right? But to the extent that we relate to it, the inhabitants of Beitar, their blood flowed into the Yam HaGadol, flowed into the sea. That's the expression of the ultimate deconstruction of this huge, huge, huge metropolis, which was called Beitar. That's the notion there of destruction. Okay. Now, a step deeper. The Mayim versus the Dam. So the Maral posits as follows. You know, Mayim, there's an interesting feature about Mayim in the Hebrew language. And that is, Mayim is always referred to in the plural. It's always referred to in the plural. Mayim. How do you say Mayim in the singular? You can't, right? You know what? Right? It's always, right? Yim is always a double expression, right? Kiflam, right? Right? It's always. Water is of, right? It's that's only when it's connected to something you say may, right? So it's, you know, where it's going to have an adjective, right? But otherwise, it's always going to be, it's always said in the plural. It's always said in the plural. The significance of that is because it's not one integrated unit. When we speak about things, we speak about, and we talked about this several times in the Be'er HaGola, we have not spoken about it in a while. We speak about a world of chaymer, of matter, and of tzura, of form. Right? The matter, the physical matter that exists in the world is particles, is pieces. Bereshis bara Elohim. Right? In the beginning, Hashem created. He didn't give it any form yet. The first creation was the creation of chaymer, the creation of matter. And that's created with the letter beis, right? Two, because matter by definition is something which is divisible. Right? That's the whole basis for the philosophical approach that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has no physicality, and that's linked to HaKadosh Baruch Hu being Echad, because only something which is physical is divisible. Right? Something which is physical, you can separate this arm from that arm, this piece from that piece, this part of the table can be sawed off from that piece of the table because it's a physical thing. The spiritual is by nature one. By nature just one. There's one unified thing. That's, you know, that's an assumed principle. When you take physical matter, right? If you have here a clump of Play-Doh sitting on the table, you would hardly even call it a clump of Play-Doh. If somebody will go and tear off a piece from that clump of Play-Doh, big deal. It's still a clump of Play-Doh. It's a little bit of a smaller clump of Play-Doh, but it's still a clump of Play-Doh. If you took that Play-Doh and you went and you fashioned it into a flower, okay, maybe use one of those cookie cutter things, and you fashioned it into a flower, right? And now it's a flower. And now somebody goes and tears off a piece of it. They've destroyed it. I don't understand. Before you tore off a piece of Play-Doh, I didn't get upset. Now you tore off a piece of Play-Doh, I get all upset. Because before, it was not an integrated unit. Right? Now that it has tzura, I've taken the ingredients of the matter of the chaymer and I've put them together and I've made them into one. And therefore, the chaymer itself is unified, is brought together under this thing, under this notion of the tzura. Mayim, water, as something like that, is considered in that sense to be the ultimate chaymer, the ultimate physicality. The Maharal writes in the Gvurais Hashem, Rabbi Hartman brings it in the footnotes, okay, Rabbi Hartman, you're here today too. Rabbi Hartman brings it in the footnotes, the Maharal in the Gvurais Hashem. Maharal in the Gvurais Hashem says, Moshe Rabbeinu got the name Moshe. Why did he have the name Moshe? It's a dramatic, the name of the leader of the Jewish people. You know, Avram is Avraham because of, he's the father of the multitude of nations. And Yitzchak, you know, the laughter of Avram, the laughter of Sarah, the laughter that surrounded all the significance of laughter. And Yaakov, the heel, the end of days, who knows what. Moshe Rabbeinu was called Moshe. Why? Because he got fished out of the water. You know, what's the significance of that? So there are other ways to understand the significance of that as well. But what does the Maharal say? Ki min hamayim mishisihu. Moshe Rabbeinu was in the water. He was cast into the water. The water as Is this physicality? Is this destruction, right? Destruction of the ultimate chumrius is where something comes apart, right? You take apart its tzura, you take apart its higher, unified purpose, and instead you make it into these separate, disparate components. Moshe was drawn out of the chomer. He was pulled out of the mayim, he was pulled out of the water, because Moshe Rabbeinu was as much the tzura, this shape, this form giver, this unifier of the people, taking the matter and streamlining it, bringing it together in a direction of purpose. So that's the idea, that's the mayim, that's the destruction, that's the undoing it. And he says, dam, dam, ki adamu hanefesh. Right? Blood is the life force. And if there's anything within the structure of a human being that is the tzura, that is the unifying, shape-giving, form-giving force in the human being, it's the nefesh. It's the soul. And therefore, when the nefesh was killed, and that is, the emblem of that is the dam flows into the water to show that that togetherness has just come apart, has been deconstructed. The dam flows into the water. And there's more to talk about, there's more to the idea here, but that's to some degree the idea. The dam is that which, right, you have, the heart pumps the blood throughout the body, and keeps it going, it's the life force from the center that radiates out to all of the limbs of the body. It's the driving force of this whole machine, all the various parts. And now the blood flows into the water, spreads apart, dissipates, it disappears, it's no longer a binding force, instead it's there mixed in with the water, the sign of the ultimate separation, deconstruction, the breakdown of the togetherness of the chaimer.
Can I ask a question?
Of course.
Is the fact that Torah is often compared to water just a different construct and a different set of symbolism, or can it be blended into what you just described?
How can it be destructive and life sustaining?
So is Mayim.
Right.
Destroy the physical and make it spiritual? Or destroy the chance of life?
The Maral talks about this, not here, elsewhere, and I mean, the elements which you are saying are all there, all correct. I don't feel comfortable at this moment to give you a full and proper answer to that, but I'll give you a partial answer and a partial explanation of that. Is that first of all, again, water is a great ambiguity. Water is the stuff of life. When we speak about the geshem, the rain, right? The world began, but this chapter 2, Perek Beis of Bereishis, says, but nothing was really happening. Why? Because the rain didn't fall yet, and therefore nothing really was produced, and nothing grew, and nothing developed. And then comes the mabul, and the rain falls, and everything is destroyed from the mea mabul. So there is a duality to Mayim. There's a duality to Torah. The Gemara says Torah is called the Sam Temes Devorai Eila. It's a Sam, a drug, right? It can be a Sam Chaim. It could be a drug that gives life, or it can be a Sam Hamoves. Person who misuses the Torah, it can be like a poison. It can be a very, very negative thing. There's a duality. There's a duality in this world from, certainly from the moment of the Eitz Hadas, and so there is a duality to Mayim, and there's a duality as well to Tyra. And yes, this aspect of Ribui, as opposed to the unifying quality of Tyra, is a piece of the puzzle that has to be understood as well. Definitely has to be understood. I'm not explaining it sufficiently today.
Does he go into why the streams, one in one direction, one in the other direction, and why the Yamagadol, instead of, let's say, the ultimate destruction, which is Yam HaMelech,
if we want to destroy something in terms of
he's going to speak about this a little bit here. Okay, so let's take a look a little bit at what he says over here. This blood, then, it says, it became part of these streams and was used by the Umay Sa'ilam, by the nations of the world, to fertilize their krum in their vineyards. You know, in halacha, we consider what would be the ultimate wine. You know, Jews are into wine. We have wine for Kiddush, we have wine for Havdalah, we have wine for a bris, we have wine for a chasana. Right? Some Sheikh Halevi, there is even really wine for a shiva house. We don't practice it so much, but there was. Right? What's the ultimate wine? When you want to make a bracha over wine, I'm not talking about what you like best. I'm talking about in the halacha's recognition of wine, what does it say?
Red.
It says red wine. Why? Because you know what wine is referred to as?
Blood.
It's referred to as the blood of the grape. V'dam enav, tishta chamer. Right? There are other psukim which speak about the bloodiness of wine. Right? So if you want platelets, you drink white wine. Right? But if you want blood, so then you drink red wine. Right? And the idea is what?
Flush.
That's where the goyim take it from.
When they make the sacraments. Yeah, presumably. But he says that you see what happened? That they took the dam of Krach Beitar.
Yeah.
And they went and they used it to fertilize their krumim, to fertilize their vineyards. I mean, this is another illustration of taking and using, right? As opposed to just simple destruction. It was taking and using. You know, the more familiar part by Krach Beitar is that they would take, that they took, you know, after the city of Beitar was destroyed, this is not so much the Gemara in Gittin, it's a Gemara elsewhere, but it says that they took, right, there was a year that the corpses of Beitar were not buried. Right? And that's, that there was a year that they weren't buried. So what did they do with the corpses? So the Gemara says that they took the corpses of the Bnei Israel and they stacked them up and made them the fences around their vineyards. That was what the Romans did. And so, it's explained that when we are sitting at a table and we eat and we bench, we make the fourth bracha of benching is Hatoiva Hametiv. Right? It's called the bracha of Hatoiva Hametiv. It's really Hakelavinu, Malkein, right? The whole thing, right? Huhetiv, Umetiv, Uyetiv, Wanu is in there. It's called the bracha of Hatoiva Hametiv. Why? Because we're thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hatoiv Shelo Hisrichu, Hashem, you are good. You did not allow those corpses to decay. Hametiv, that you allowed us to bury them. Ultimately, they were given to burial, and they had not decayed or decomposed by that time. There's another bracha called Hatoiv Hametiv. When you make the other bracha of Hatoiv Hametiv? On a better wine. Right? So Tosfos explains that the idea was because Hatoiv Hametiv is associated with Beitar, and there was their vineyards. So when we get a good wine, we make Hatoiv Hametiv. We make Hatoiv Hametiv. So there is this very, very significant linkage between these things. The Meshech Chachma is a beautiful piece, and I may not be quoting it completely accurately. I think I've shared with you part of this Meshech Chachma before. And Meshech Chachma explains, why did they add this fourth bracha of benching? Because of the Harugei Beitar. I mean, it's very nice. Thank you, Hashem, for taking care of the Harugei Beitar. But why when you bench? I mean, I'm just telling this to you. When you guys are completely losing your appetite, you see all those munchkins are sitting there. Right? You know, I mean, it's such an unappealing picture. Like, what is the idea? What are we doing over here? Why is it mentioned in benching? And he says, Mamish, gorgeous. I mean, it's not a good vort. It's a gorgeous vort. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous vort. He says that the idea is like this, because what do you bench? You thank Hashem for the food. First bracha. Second bracha, you thank Hashem for Eretz Yisrael. Third bracha, you thank Hashem for Yerushalayim. Why are you thanking Him for all of these things? I mean, you're eating food now. Why are you thanking Him for Eretz Yisrael? Why are you thanking Him for Yerushalayim? The idea is that we understand that the bracha which we have, the bracha of food, it's coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It comes through which channels? Comes through Eretz Yisrael. It comes through Yerushalayim. Right? Those are the channels, like we learned before in the Netzach Yisrael. That the idea was that the center of bracha was through Yerushalayim, was through the Beis HaMikdash. Uh-oh. The Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. Eretz Yisrael, the Jewish people were sent out of Eretz Yisrael into Golus, and now we're benching and we're thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what's this Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim? Instead of saying thank you Hashem for Yerushalayim, we say Hashem please have mercy on Yerushalayim, Rachim. I mean, that's not the bracha they said when the Beis Hamikdash was standing, right? Rachim, no, Hashem have mercy and rebuild Yerushalayim. So one would say here all the channels are cut off. But when you saw that the Jewish people had not only had Yerushalayim destroyed, but had the Churban on top of Churban. Churban Beitar was 70 years after the destruction of Yerushalayim. Just as the Jewish people were sort of catching their breath, thinking they were rebuilding. Boom, knocked down again a second time. So they would say, oh my gosh, we are really lost. We're completely lost. But even in the destruction of Beitar, what you saw was that HaKadosh Baruch Hu preserved, that Hashem was with them even in the depths of Golus. So the Chazal added a fourth bracha. If they were only being mevarach about Eretz Yisrael, about Yerushalayim, people would say, okay, and now? Forget about it. The fourth bracha, HaTov HaMeitiv, is to say, he's always there. And that's why it's not just HaTov HaMeitiv. It's Hu Heitiv, Hu Meitiv, Hu Yeitiv. He did, he does, and he will do. Haya, Hayveviyeh. Always, constant. He's not gone. Hashem's not gone from the Jewish people. That's why we have to make that assertion in benching, because we're talking about his presence. See, it's enough to get your appetite back. So that's the presence of that bracha. So the Meshech Chachma explains, and he says that, you know, one of the great problems in the Golus is that when we're missing all of our structures of the Jewish people, so then we can get mixed in with the nations. And we're not a nation anymore, right? We're not a nation anymore. We don't have any things that nations have. So therefore, with that destruction can come all kinds of assimilation, right? When you have a strong nationalist identity, there's much less of a risk of assimilation than when you're more of an American than you are a member of the Jewish people. And that's symbolized by Yayin. Right? That's the wine. You know, the wine. So he says, you know, you find that it was at the times of this downfall that Chazal made their gzeros, made their decrees on the wine. And so we want to say HaTev HaMeitiv also when we drink a good wine. To remember, you know, we may be down, but we're not out. We're still together. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still with us. He's Marech, he discusses it more. And I'm not saying, but there's this linkage here with the Yayin. And says the Maral says, let's go back to what the Maral says, is that the dam that was lost from the Jewish people went and was converted in something that was used by the Goyim. They used it to fertilize their fields, their vineyards specifically. Ki b'shvichas hadam al adama bazeh nasnu kayach el ha'adama latzmiach hayayin. It went and it instead produced this wine in its place. Now,
where is the Meshech Chachma?
I think it may be in Parshas Veschanan by benching. I think that's where it is.
So is that like a magnification of the destruction? It wasn't just like they wiped out all the people, but it's just magnifying that much more. That
right. This is it. You know, the blood flowing out, taking over the, you know, disappearing into the river, and then
absorbing
being used, right, being absorbed by the land to produce itself in a different form. That the wine that the goyim would then go and intoxicate themselves on, you know, giving them the luxury from the, you know, this is the Jewish people. So finally, let's just talk about one more aspect of this thing, which is this interesting characterization of the Bikas. Now, excuse me. Let me just close this. So, Michael, you asked why I didn't go into the Yam HaMelech, because the Yam HaMelech would be useless. When the Gemara describes whenever the Gemara uses the Yam HaMelech, it describes something that you never want to use again. You throw it into the Yam HaMelech. Here, there's very clearly a point that it was to be used again for the Jewish people. It was destruction. But it was then co-opted by the Umay Sa'ilam. So it goes into the Yam HaGadol, right, as opposed to the Yam HaMelech, which is the corroding sea of salt, you know, the dead sea. It goes into the Yam HaGadol, the great, you know, the great Mediterranean Sea, which is considered to be more usable. You still have to desalinize the waters of the Mediterranean Sea, but it's a different description. on the way, right, in these streams flowed into the Yam HaGadol. On the way, these streams fertilized the fields of the Umay Salem. So this was in the Valley of Yodayim. The Valley of Yodayim. And there were two streams. And there were two-thirds Mayim and one-third Dam. So Maral does some fascinating things here. Okay, so here, ready for the stuff that sounds cute from the Maral, but is not really just cute, but it sounds awfully cute. So Bikas Yodayim. Yodayim. Right, here's the valley, and you have Yodayim. You have the two streams. There are two streams which went in different directions. There were like two arms. Okay, one, you know, that's not just cute. I mean, it could very, very well be that that's why they called it Bikas Yodayim. The stream splintered off in two directions. It may have looked, you know, when they were flying over it in a helicopter, it looked like a person with his hands spread out. Bikas Yodayim. Says the Maral that the dam is the nefesh, it's from the guf, it's from the body. And the yadayim were the streams. So the dam was one third, and the yadayim, the waters, were two thirds. Another little intricacy, another little chaf, sort of within this thing. But then he says like this, yadayim. Who's doing the destruction here of the Jewish people?
Esav.
Esav. Yadayim yidei Esav. The hands are the hands of Esav. Hands are the hands of Esav. It's not just, oh boy, hairy arms. Right? It feels like Esav's hands. Same way the voice of Yaakov is not just, oh, you know, thin voice, or he speaks so nicely and gently and politely and spiritually, it sounds like Yaakov. Chazal tell us, Hakol Kol Yaakov, the principal quality, the principal inheritance of Yaakov is his voice. The principal inheritance of Esav is his hands. When the Jewish people met up with Edom, when they were on their way to Eretz Yisrael from Mitzrayim, so they said, Edom, king of Edom, we want to send you a message. The message is, we were in Mitzrayim, and we cried out to Hashem, Vayishma Koleinu, and he listened to our voice. Remember, we have the power of the voice. We cry out to Hashem, and Hashem answers, watch out. So how did he respond? Vayetze Edom likraseinu, right? V'yod chazoka. They came out to greet us with a strong arm. They said, you got a voice, but we got arms, right? And therefore, they warned us, right? Pen v'cherev, they have the sword. That was the bracha which Yitzhak gave them also, the sword, the extension of the arm. It was the Yodayim. Bikas Yodayim, the valley of Yodayim. Now, that in itself, as far as I'm concerned, you know, is already very, very significant. That would be what it would describe. But the Yad, right? Hine Yad Hashem. Right? We're holding now Parshas Va'era, Parshas Boy, Yitzias Mitzrayim. What's the description always? Right? B'yad Chazaka of Yisrael Netuya. Yad Chazaka. What's B'yad Chazaka? What do we say in the Haggadah? B'yad Chazaka Zu Hadever. That refers to the plague, as it says, Hine Yad Hashem, the hand of Hashem Hoya was against Mignecha Asher Basada, your cattle, your livestock that you have in your fields. The Yad Hashem, even when we speak of the Yad Hashem, refers to Midas Hadin, judgment, punishment. Right? That's the Yad Hashem refers to that, you know, to that. It's used in that context. And that's, in a certain sense, that's the Midah of Esav. Is the Midah of Esav is Midas Hadin, is the Midah of judgment, of destruction. To some degree, that, it's beyond the scope of what we're going to discuss completely here right now, but that's to some degree the point of connection between Yitzchak and Esav, Yitzchak's love of Esav, right? They share something there in the Midas Hadin, in this characteristic of judgment. And it's in this Bikas Yodayim. Din, if you remember, is also always splintered. Right? What happens? Right? There's the judgment, right? We have the scales, you have the judgment, and there's the winner, and there's the loser, right? That's why the name Elohim, the Maral teaches us, is in the plural, right? It's always this duality, this doubling. If you remember, just for the sake of just connecting, so, you know, these are some of the ideas which he shares, and there's much more like, well, but you know, of course, this just connects inherently, that Yad and Din and this splintering is like the Mayim. The Mayim, which is the plural, you know, the duality which we've been talking about here. And so these choices the choices over here of exactly how it happens and where the dam, you know, that the idea that the dam should come out and the dam should flow and it flows into the water and it's used by the goyim and it's in Bikas Yodayim. You know, every element of the story has its connotations. And it's the triumph of the distance of din over the closeness and the unity of Rachamim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to maintain in Klal Yisrael. Now, just to, you know, to wrap it together, so last week we learned about the destruction of Har HaMelech, and this week we learned about the destruction of Beitar. Last week it was the populousness. This week it is the structure, the creation, the buildings that they made. But both of them, if you remember, it hasn't been a very long time since we were talking about the one and the many with Esav and Yaakov. Last week, that's exactly what we talked about. Remember? There was that Bar de Roma, that person from the south, who was going and destroying the armies of the Romans, and they said, oh, please, let us not fall in the hands of one man. Esav is this, you know, this plurality, right? It's always this Rebu, this Chaimer, this physical world. It's not unified together under one thing. And here also, in its own shape, in its own form, this also finds its way. The mayim that erodes, that breaks apart, the dam that was holding us all together, instead it's broken apart by the mayim that spreads it and dissipates it. You know, that's indeed, you know, to some degree what's happening over here. And at the same time, you know, it's Esav coming and taking Koyach Yisrael, taking the power of the Jewish people away from them, and cultivating their own luxuries, their own strengths, through the churban, through the destruction of the bias of the Beitar of Klal Yisrael. Right.
Did the valley get its name because of this event, or was the valley named that prior to?
It doesn't say. Not clear. That's why I say I suspect even al derech hapshat, even in the simple meaning, it could have been called the Valley of the Hands, because that's what it might have looked like when it split off with these two rivers going in both directions. Mm-hmm. But there's a Yadayim the Esav. Isn't that such a? It's something to make that Yadayim because Yadayim, such a weird name. But Yadayim the Esav. It's great. Okay, the next story is also a story about Dam. We're in the middle, right? Again, this Perek Zion also is the last Perek about the Agadata and Gittin, but it also divides up because he deals with separate Agados, you know, pieces of the Agada. Next one is the story of the bubbling and boiling blood of Zechariah. Story for itself, and it's a shame we were talking about it.
They call Three River Stadium in Pittsburgh. Because you can look down over from any of the points, particularly from Mount Lebanon. You can look down and see that the river, the Allegheny River, flows in. And